This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Independence Day weekend. This is a great weekend, by the way, to declare your independence from orthodoxy and religion. I'm Annie Laurie, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is the weekend of July 3rd and 4th, 2010.
And hello, those of you listening in Atlanta, Anchorage, Grand Rapids, and we're, of course, podcasting to the universe, or is that multiverses?
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF. You can find us at FFRF.org. We are the country's largest organization of freethinkers, and that's kind of an umbrella word that includes atheists and agnostics and other types of religious skeptics and doubters. July the 4th is independence. As Annie Laurie said, declare our independence from orthodoxy and from religion. And in fact, the founders of our country were proudly rebellious revolutionaries. They didn't want the king or the monarch or the lord telling them what to think. So we think free thought is a very proud American tradition.
We'll be using this secular holiday weekend as an excuse to contemplate the nature of existence.
And speaking of the nature of existence, that's the title of a brand new film. We'll be speaking today with the director of that film. His name is Roger Nygaard. He's the filmmaker and the narrator. The movie officially debuts this week, and it looks at a cross-section of beliefs about existence, about God, about morality, and in the process, Nygaard interviewed some of our favorite freethinkers, Julia Sweeney, Andrew Yang, Richard Dawkins, as well as scientists and a whole bunch of so-called holy men.
And we'll hear some clips from that film and talk with Roger Nygaard on the second half of Free Thought Radio. And in a few minutes, we'll talk with Professor Mark Silk, who heads the Center for the Study of Religion in Public Life at Trinity College. We'll talk with him on his take about a new Gallup poll supposedly showing increased church attendance in this country and what he thinks might be wrong with that study.
But the big Free Thought news of the week, you may have heard about it, is that the new Prime Minister of Australia, the first woman Prime Minister, does not believe in a God.
Julia Gillard became Australia's Prime Minister on June 24th, and she won't play the religion card, as ABC News in Australia said, and she has no intention of pretending to believe in a God to attract religiously inclined voters.
Julia Gillard ousted Kevin Rudd, who was a regular at Canberra worship services.
And talk about a refreshing politician. She has told the media she does not go through religious rituals for the sake of appearance.
She told the media, "I am what I am, and I'm not going to pretend a faith I don't feel."
We have a two-minute clip of an interview that Julia Gillard gave ABC Radio in Australia.
Do you believe in God?
No, I don't, John. I'm not a religious person. I was brought up in the Baptist Church, as is now very well known, I think. We're Welsh migrants. We're Baptists. I grew up going to Mitcham Baptist Church. We lived two doors down from the Reverend there, Ian Porter, and I was great friends with his daughter, Helen. So I grew up going to Baptist Youth Group and all the rest. But during my adult life, I've, found a different path. I'm, of course, a great respecter of religious beliefs, but they're not my beliefs, John.
For years now, we've had prime ministers who make a ritual of Sunday morning going to church, being seen to be and filmed going to church, and both John Howard and Kevin Rudd courted successfully. the vital Christian vote. How are you going to, anyway, attract those voters and that support?
John, I am not going to pretend a faith I don't feel. And for people of faith, I think the greatest compliment I could pay to them is to respect their genuinely held beliefs and not to engage in some pretense about mine. I think it's not the right thing. And I'm not reflecting on past prime ministers here. I'm definitely not doing that. But I'm trying to answer your question as frankly as I can. I've never thought it was the right thing for me to go through religious rituals for the sake of appearance. You know, I am what I am, and people will judge that. For, you know, people of faith, what I would say to them is I grew up in a, you know, Christian church, a Christian background, a Baptist church. I won prizes for catechism for being able to remember Bible verses. I am steeped in that tradition, but I've made decisions in my adult life about my own views.
Are you worried about the Christian vote?
Look, I'm worried about the national interest, about doing the right thing by Australians, and I'll allow, people to form their own views on whatever is going to drive their views. What I can say to Australians broadly, of course, is I believe you can be a person of strong principle and values from a variety of perspectives, okay. And I've outlined mine to you.
And according to Rob Chamlers, the longest-serving member of the Canberra Press Gallery, and he's the editor of Inside Canberra, Julia Gillard is not the first non-religious Australian prime minister. Bob Hawke was an agnostic, and Edward Whitlam was described as a proud atheist who earned the undying hatred of the churches when he removed the sales tax from the contraceptive pill for women.
And to further quote the Australian press, the founding fathers of Australia wisely decided that country should have a secular constitution, not attached to any religion.
And as I saw when I was down there earlier this year, the Australian population is also largely secular. Bureau of Statistics figures show that in 2001, barely 10% of Australians named a Christian religion to which they adhered. Between 1996 and 2001, which is just 5 years, the number of adherents dropped by 7%. The biggest denomination, Catholic, was only 13%.
And let's listen to something that's music to my ears. This is the secular swearing in it. It's so nice and clean.
I, Julia Eileen Gillard, do solemnly and sincerely affirm and declare that I will well and truly serve the Commonwealth of Australia, her land and her people, in the office of Prime Minister.
How could you ask for more? And that's all we were asking President Obama to do, to follow the language of the presidential oath or affirmation provided for in the U.S. Constitution, which is also without a reference to a Bible or so help me God.
So religion is declining in the United States and in Australia. So what a come down in our country to see a new poll released by Gallup claiming that more Americans say they attend church, mosque, and synagogue.
After this short break, we'll bring on a top expert on religion in America who has strong reservations about the results of that poll. Coming up, Professor Mark Silk of the Center for the Study of Religion in Public Life. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, here with Dan Barker.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio. This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Church attendance is up slightly in the United States this year, That is, according to a new Gallup research, which was released last week, slightly more than 43% of Americans told Gallup that they attend church, synagogue, or mosque weekly or almost every week.
But not everyone is buying the findings. Mark Silk is professor of religion in public life at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. He has a PhD in medieval history from Harvard. He worked as a reporter and columnist for many years at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. In 1996, Mark Silk became the founding director of the Greenberg Center for the Study of Religion in Public Life at Trinity. He edits Religion in the News, a magazine that examines how the news media handle religious subject matter. In 2007, Mark Silk also became director of the Trinity College Program on Public Values, which is comprising both the Greenberg Center and a new Institute for the Study of Secularism in Society and Culture. Professor Silk is the author of Unsecular Media, Making News of Religion in America. He is co-editor of Religion by Region, which is an 8-volume series on religion and public life in the United States. He is co-author of the forthcoming One Nation Divisible, Religion and Region in America Today, and he's been quoted this week about the Gallup poll.
Thanks for joining Free Thought Radio.
Well, glad to be here, Dan and Annie.
So why are you saying that the numbers that just came out by Gallup look fishy?
Well, they're fishy in this sense, that the numbers showing that 43% of Americans are in fact in some house of worship once a week, or almost once a week, are widely recognized as inaccurate, based on very close studies. I mean, people, I'm not suggesting that Gallup is misrepresenting what people tell them, only that people tell them a sort of optimistic versions of their worship life. It's sort of like when you ask people whether they voted, more people will tell you that they voted than actually voted. It's generally regarded as a good thing to vote and to go to church, and so people exaggerate their good behavior.
Or they underreport like bad behavior, like teenagers and substance abuse or something.
Well, yes, if you've had any teenagers in your family, you'll recognize that pretty well.
I remember a study, I forget who wrote it, but back in, they surveyed an entire county in Ohio, Ashtabula County, I think, and about 40%, as expected, reported they went to church, but when they actually did a head count of every single congregation, and it came out only about 19% were actually in the pews on a given non-holiday weekend. Do you remember that study?
Yes, there have been a few studies comparable to that, and based on those studies that were mostly done in the 1990s, I think most sociologists of religion who look at this kind of thing would say that the actual numbers are somewhere in the mid to low 20s in terms of worship attendance on a weekly basis.
Well, it would be kind of obvious. I mean, we'd be seeing a lot more congested streets around churches on Sunday, wouldn't we?
Well, it depends on where you are. Maybe in Madison, not so congested.
Well, we have a bus sign campaign going in our town right now, a huge king-size sign that says, "Sleep in on Sunday." So maybe that's contributing to that.
Well, you never know. But, you know, that's not to say that the little upticks noted by not only Gallup, but also there's a Labor Department does an annual survey of how people spend their time, and that showed a little uptick, too, in terms of worship behavior by not just attendance, but how people say how much time they spend doing stuff. And so between 2008 and 2009, there was a little increase there. So it's not inconceivable that there's been a little bit of increased religious activity in the country over the past couple of years or so. One of the interesting things about that, though, is that people do tend to think that when times get hard, people go to church, you know, sort of no atheists in depression-era foxholes. Actually, the indications there are that as people think the economy was getting better, they were going to church more. So go figure.
Now, the Trinity College, and you were in part, your center was in part a participant in ARIS, the American Religious Identification Survey 2008. Do you want to briefly recap what those findings were in terms of the growing free thought population?
Yeah. This was the third of a series of very large telephone surveys of Americans to get at their religious identification and how that relates to a whole battery of other demographic variables. What those 3 points of time indicate is, a number of striking things. Perhaps the most striking is the doubling of the number of or proportion of Americans, more than doubling of the number, but the doubling of the proportion of Americans who say that they have no religion at all. And so that went from around 7% to something like 15%. That's a striking finding. There's also a notable shift of the population, for example, of Catholics now from the Northeast to the Southwest, and a range of other, a whole slew of other things.
So you worked with Barry Cosman then on the most recent one?
Yes. It was a sort of collaboration of our two centers in terms of the funding and some of the questions that we put in and so on. Barry and Ariella Kesar are the two principal investigators. That's survey research of that sort is their profession, but we were very much involved.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this very intriguing book, which I have not read yet, Unsecular Media, Making News of Religion in America. When did that book come out?
Well, it's getting on in age, about 1995, but it's possible, as I recall, you may even make a personal appearance in that book.
Oh, really?
Because there's some discussion of coverage of supernatural events.
Yeah, the foundation has complained about Bible Belt journalism in the past. So perhaps that was how we got in there.
There you are on page 140.
Really?
Yes.
Well, we'll have to get a copy for our library.
Definitely.
Absolutely. University of Illinois Press.
And so what were the basic conclusions of that book?
Well, it was an effort really to look at the different ways that American news media cover religion. In some sense, it's a book kind of critique of the standard culture wars critique. We say that journalists are hostile to religion, and an effort to try to talk about the kinds of stories that journalists tend to do about religion and what tends to be approved of, such as when, nuns help the poor, and what's disapproved of when you have, priests abusing boys. So that there are certain kinds of stories that are familiar and that are done. In the case of coverage of sort of strange or allegedly supernatural events, the tendency there, I think, is for journalists, and you'll probably understand that, not to actually try to debunk any of those stories, but to interview people who are believers. And so it's really, those tend to be stories about supernatural belief, people who feel that their prayers are answered or whatever because they managed to survive. And that has tended to drive atheists crazy because they see a kind of fellow traveling or reluctance to question these alleged happenings. Of course, it's not so easy to go about the business of disproving somebody's a supernatural belief. So if you're a journalist, you just say, what they believe.
James Randi has done kind of a good job.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, there are people who do it professionally, but, if you have, if somebody alleges an apparition of the Virgin and you don't see anything, but they believe it, what are you going to do? You report that they believe it. I mean, I'm not, this is really meant to be more descriptive than
of what happens.
of how journalists behave.
Well, we have run out of time, but we're very grateful you joined us. And when does One Nation Divisible come out?
Actually, it's been out. I think you were reading from a slightly old
press release or something.
Yeah. Press release, but it's been out for a year.
Oh, maybe well, a little we more, will look and, that one up. Thank you so much.
I'm delighted to be here. Anytime.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Professor Mark Silk of the Trinity College Center for the Study of Religion in Public Life. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
And we'll be back to talk with the filmmaker of the new lighthearted documentary, The Nature of Existence.
Hi, my name is Doug, and I'm from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Annie Laurie Geller, here with Dan Barker. Who are you, Dan?
I saw your head was down. You weren't up to the mic yet. So, but yeah, I'm Dan Barker, and this is Annie Laurie Geller. And we're really pleased to have on the phone with us today Roger Nygaard. He's a film and TV director. He's directed, produced, and written and edited for film and television. His first feature was the comedy High Strung. And then he did Back to Back. It premiered as an HBO original motion picture. Suckers, a dramatic comedy about a car salesman, was acquired by HBO in 2001. Roger Nygaard directed and edited Trekkies, a documentary described as affectionate, non-judgmental, or terrifying, unsettling by another reviewer, depending on who you ask. Nygaard revisited Star Trek fans with Trekkies 2, which was released worldwide by Paramount in 2004. He's also directed a docu-comedy about UFO enthusiasts, 6 Days in Roswell. He directed and edited episodes of the HBO series, The Mind of the Married Man, episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and episodes of the Fox series, The Bernie Mac Show and The Loop, the NBC series, The Office, and the Disney XD series, Zeke and Luther, and many others. His current feature documentary that we want to talk about today, an amazing film, it's called The Nature of Existence, asking, why do we exist and do we have a purpose? Roger Nygaard traveled around the world interviewing religious scholars, physicists, artists, philosophers, spiritual visionaries, and some well-known freethinkers and others who have influenced and inspired or freaked out humanity. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Roger.
Thank you very much. Yeah, sorry if I took on too narrow of a topic on the new film.
Too narrow of a topic. Is sprawling a good word for that? It really goes through the entire world and the entire cross-section of religion.
Yeah, kind of maybe impossible to do. You know, how do you make a movie about existentialism and what's the point of everything? But I guess the challenge is what drew me.
Well, you did it. And I guess it's this weekend, right, is the debut or the premiere of the documentary, The Nature of Existence?
Opening in Los Angeles and Irvine at a couple of theaters and then the rest of the country over the summer.
So I think we'd like to play part of your introduction before we go any further, Roger, where you talk about pancakes. Would that be okay?
Sure, go ahead.
All right.
When does our search for meaning begin? I was born into an Episcopalian family, which is sort of like Catholic light. I remember church being a countdown to brunch. I would tick off the time and 20 minutes to pancakes, 10 minutes to pancakes. I wasn't religious. I wasn't non-religious. I just wasn't that interested in much more than pancakes at the time. But I remember that wondering about the afterlife and the meaning of my own existence began when I was 13, when my father died from multiple sclerosis. I couldn't see any meaning or purpose behind it, and I'd sort of blocked it out of my mind, living in denial of my own mortality. But the whole what's the point debate in my head started again with the events of September 11, 2001. That was the day that forced a lot of people to rethink their place in the universe. Suddenly, there was our mortality right on television. And that act of murder was caused by people who truly believed what they were doing was right. How can we all believe in things that are so different?
So, Roger, well, that's just a sort of a teaser. You interviewed Hindus and Jains and Catholics and Muslims and Hare Krishna and Jews and Taoists and Buddhists and Druids and Mormons. And there's a hilarious scene there with Christian wrestlers for Jesus. Tell us about
the ultimate Christian wrestlers in Athens, Georgia.
And how was that?
That might be one of the jaw on the floor moments, I guess you might call it, in the movie, when it's kind of hard to believe when you're what you're seeing. But it's kind of bizarre when you're there, when you're immersed in it, when you're a part of it. It kind of starts to feel normal because that's what people are doing, and it's really actually very touching to the people who are there. So, as an observer, it was fascinating to watch that process.
So this wrestling thing is already kind of fakey, and then here's this fakey religious stuff all mixed into it. And these people are like in tears, wrapped up in this thing.
Well, if you imagine, I mean, wrestling is about good versus evil. So it wasn't a big stretch for them to bring Jesus into the ring and portray good versus evil and mix wrestling with Jesus.
Now, you went to lots and lots of different kinds of people. Did you have people who you wanted to interview who turned you down?
Oh, yeah, lots of times. I mean, the hardest people to interview are celebrities, you know, and the Pope is a celebrity, the Dalai Lama is a celebrity, and celebrities tend to want to mingle with other celebrities. So I had a little run-in with the Pope, which you see in the movie. You know, I got within about 6 feet of him, and but I really wanted to interview Richard Dawkins, too, which to me, he's sort of the Pope of atheists. So you kind of get to see me, you know, going for both popes.
Well, and you did interview Dawkins, and he shows up 3 or 4 times in the film. Do we have a Dawkins clip?
Yeah, we do actually. Well, it starts with Michael Shermer. Shall we listen to that one?
Somehow there is a source. You know, why is there something rather than nothing?
You could just as easily ask, why should there be nothing instead of something? Maybe something is the natural state of things, and nothing would be really weird.
Maybe it did need an entity to start it, but it's a very, very different thing to go from there to saying that that entity was a god, a conscious being, an intelligence, the kind of thing that forgives sins and answers prayers. That is the most preposterous piece of lazy succumbing to wishful thinking that you could imagine.
I guess every viewer is going to bring their own feelings to this documentary, and we all have our different backgrounds, but I'm impressed that you were able to interview some of these other nuts and not break out in laughter. How did you pull that off?
Well, you know, a lot of practice after making a film like Trekkies, I guess, you know, when you're with people. I don't challenge people. I don't get into fights with people. That's not my goal. My goal is to go find interesting people and listen. And because people want to be heard. And if you'll show up and you'll listen to what they have to say, they really appreciate it, and even if you may disagree with them, and I disagreed with a lot of people in the movie, but I still learned a lot about why they believe what they believe, and that's a big step for me. And you know, I started out making this movie very angry, and I ended up in a much more peaceful place because I understood much better why people believe things that were so divergent.
Now, you did sort of different segments, like you would flash on the screen morality or flash on the screen some existential question.
One of them was
happiness, and one of them was suffering. And I was struck, of course, from my point of view, distressed that a couple of people that you interviewed actually said suffering was good because it was like being close to God then. Did that strike you?
Yeah, suffering is the Padre Pio, who is a Catholic priest, once a week, he would disappear into his room, and he would come out with holes in his hands, you know, the stigmata that would appear while he was alone. And he defined love as equal to suffering, you know, which to me seems bizarre to equate those two things. But you kind of really can't understand happiness or joy if you haven't suffered. They're really, you know, you need both poles. And so the idea of a paradise or a nirvana where you go for infinity and all you do is feel happy the whole time, it makes no sense because after a while it would become meaningless to you if you didn't have the opposite experience to compare it to.
But in that one of the segments on suffering, I was really struck by the comment of the poet, let's see, what's his name? Amiri
Baraka. Baraka.
Amiri Baraka. Yeah,
yeah, should we listen to that?
You can walk down the street and fire 10 churches before you get to Springfield Avenue. There's churches on both sides of the block. Black people pray more than anybody in the world. But what do they have to show for it? All their prayers. They got big Jews, got wealthy ministers. But how come the streets are dirty? You know, how come my children are not in school? How come my children are killing each other on the street? You know, see, that's a different thing.
How did you find him?
I saw him on television when he wrote, he had a poem that he wrote, which was very critical of the United States government. And he was New Jersey's poet laureate, and they stripped him of that title because people were so angry at him for being critical of the government after 9/11. You know, I mean, I thought there was a First Amendment, but people don't like the First Amendment to apply to things that they don't necessarily believe in sometimes. And so I wanted to hear what he had to say. He sounded like an interesting person.
So, well, you obviously believe in the First Amendment.
Yeah, clearly, because I allow people to exercise it in my own film. You know, the film is not just my beliefs. It's really a collection of the world's beliefs on all these difficult questions. And so then I lay them out to the audience and I let you decide. But I think that if you're a rational person, a conclusion is kind of inescapable.
Well, you told Dan something that someone had just, a woman had seen your film and she said, she announced that she was an atheist after watching it. Was that something I overheard?
Yeah, I've had some really interesting reactions from people who have seen the movie, you know, and across the spectrum, you know. And she's one who told me that after seeing the movie, she could no longer believe in God, even though she tried. She kept trying. But, you know, my goal in making the film is not necessarily to present an atheist agenda or a religious agenda. It's to present and approach truth, whatever it may be. I wanted to get as close to what the truth is. I was open. I would, you know, if God appeared to me, I was happy to listen. And if, you know, when Richard Dawkins appeared before me, I listened to what he had to say. You know, I'll listen to anybody's argument.
Well, that does come across in the film. There's an awful lot of preachers in there, but you are not one of them. You're letting people talk, and the viewers can kind of piece this whole puzzle together. And of course, from our point of view, we were happy to see a lot of people that we've actually interviewed on this show before, including Andrianne, who spoke at one of our conferences. And it was intriguing actually to watch your pilgrimage to Andrianne, who's the widow of Carl Sagan. She's the author and co-producer of the movie Contact. And she gave you a tour of some of the artifacts that are around her house. Do you remember what some of those were?
Yeah, well, she had a postcard from Gandhi. She had a page from Darwin's notebook, you know, on the evolution of species. And she said, these are the things we venerate, you know, to her and Carl Sagan. If you want to call them religious, that's what they were religious about.
Brian, we have a little clip of what Andrianne said on that.
On the nature of nature.
About nature.
Right turn.
I finally figured out which right to take on Main Street. And then I found the house where the late Carl Sagan's wife lives.
The God of Spinoza, the God of Einstein, is our ability to understand nature. That's how we worship what is sacred, what is holy, by trying to find the deepest understanding of nature. Our bias against this is so strong, you can hear it in the word supernatural, above the natural, as if our fantasies and our little stories that we make up, whether we made them up 10,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago or this week, as if our stories could compete with the reality of nature as revealed by science.
I hope we're not playing too much of the film here.
No, it's great. No, well, the film is called The Nature of Existence. And
yeah.
There's the website is just the name of the film, thenatureofexistence.com. And a lot of clips are on the website as well. And the film, of course, is opening in theaters this weekend.
Now, before we go out for the break, we should have somebody religious. We have a short clip of that infamous...
Oh, Jed Smock.
Jed Smock. And Roger, who is he again for people?
Brother Jed Smock. Yeah, he calls himself a confrontational evangelist. He said because Jesus was offensive. Jesus offended people. He got in their faces. And so Brother Jed gets in your face and goes on college campuses all year round and preaches fire and brimstone. I saw him when I was in college, and I always remembered him. Tracked him down 20 years later, found out he was doing the exact same thing on college campuses, and went and spent a week with him.
Well, he's a little creepy. I mean, the way he talks to college girls, I mean, overly sexist and kind of slimy in that. But here's
their attention.
Here's just a little bit of what Jed says about us atheists.
You believe I'm going to hell?
Well, of course, but you can be saved.
Why is God so selfish that he requires us to love him, but we can not be tortured forever?
My answer is the most loving thing that God can do for the unbeliever is to send him to hell.
Okay, well, we're talking with filmmaker Roger Nygaard. That wasn't Roger, that was that crazy creature, Jed Smock. We're talking about the new film just premiering called The Nature of Existence, and we'll be right back. We have a few more clips, including Julia Sweeney, coming up.
Francisco Aguilar. I come originally from Argentina. I hear him Free Thought Radio, and I am glad that you are here to be able to give us a voice. Thank you.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
The dark side of that belief that thoughts mean something are people who say, oh, there's people starving in wherever, but I am just praying for them. It's people who think that praying for other people actually means something, that they're actually sending good thoughts into the universe actually means something. It doesn't mean anything. Only actions mean something.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. You probably recognize the voice there of Julia Sweeney, the comedian and creator of her own movie called Letting Go of God. And that was part of an interview that our guest, Roger Nygaard, conducted of her as part of his brand new film, which is debuting this week. The film is called The Nature of Existence. And we have Roger on the phone with us. So,
Hi, guys.
So you also got to interview a famous scientist like Leonard Susskind, who did like the co-discoverer or inventor of string theory. And then Irvin Kershner, the director of Star Wars. You got to talk to him about the meaning of life and art. Were you a little intimidated with all these heavy hitters?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You go meet them, they're just people. And so it was like just having the conversation with somebody about something that we're both really interested in, and you kind of bond immediately, no matter you know what their reputation might be.
Now, you also talked, besides talking to scientists and celebrities and holy men, you talked with some of your friends and waitresses, and we really liked a little seventh grade girl. I think she lives across the street from you. Is that right?
Yeah, she's my neighbor. I met her and thought, wow, she's really an interesting person. I wonder what she'll say. I didn't know what she would say until I sat down and asked her the question.
Well, here's one of her thoughts about the afterlife.
What do you think happens when we die?
There is no afterlife. I'm going to let you in a little secret there. There's no heaven, no hell. You die. Boom, dead. Like a blindfold on your eyes and you can't think anymore. I think it's a lot better than eternal happiness, personally. A world with only happiness is a world with no point. And I'd feel like a puppet. I'd feel controlled. I can't feel pain. I can't feel anything but this happiness. I'd hate it.
It's funny she said, I hate it, while she was smiling.
Very charming. It's kind of like, I forget who said that, but there's millions of people yearning for an afterlife who don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Sunday afternoon.
I think that was Ingersoll.
I like Aldous Huxley. You know, he once said that maybe this planet is some other planet's hell. But I would rewrite that to say maybe it's some other planet's heaven. Because, I mean, look how wonderful that this world is that we live in. It's, you know, maybe it's a matter of perception.
Well, in your film, you got to see an awful lot of it. You went to the Great Wall of China, and you went to India.
You went to the Taj Mahal.
You went to
Oxford.
The Vatican. You went all over. That you went to Native American religious spiritualists out there in the wild. You talked with Mormons. I have to tell you, besides this amazing filming, it must have been an incredible project. The editing, I cannot imagine how you managed to edit. And I guess you're a professional editor, but it was really amazing how you pulled this together.
It took a long time. That's all. 450 hours of interviews. You know, just imagine just watching it. It would take 11 40-hour work weeks just to watch it. So that's one reason it took me 4 years to shoot and edit this movie.
Wow.
I didn't notice you looked any older, but I guess I should have been looking.
Yeah, well, I certainly, every place I went, you know, put a few more stripes on my soul if I had one.
So you went to, you asked the same basic list of questions to all these people so that you could compare their answers, which I thought was a pretty genius way of doing that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the Socratic method, right? If you want to get at truth, just ask people questions, and then the answers is like the best answers will stand up for themselves, and that's really science. You know, science requires criticism of ideas and concepts so that the best concepts ultimately will triumph.
Now, at the end of the film, you go back, we don't have a clip of it, but you go back to talking about pancakes. Are we supposed to take a message from that about your personal views on life and religion?
Yeah, I love food. It's about living in the moment and enjoying what's there in front of you, you know, every day, great food.
Well, we see you eating pizza and barbecue and all sorts of food
in this
movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the barbecue.
Barbecue chicken. I had the best chicken I've ever had in my life in Huntsville, Texas, and the worst chicken I ever had in my life in Chefu, China. And so one movie, I had both the best and the worst.
So the webpage is... Tell us again the webpage for the movie.
It's just the name of the film, thenatureofexistence.com, and it has all the information about which cities and where it'll be showing, and then home video will come around in November.
Well, thank you so much for making that movie, and thank you for taking the time to talk with Free Thought Radio.
Oh, it's been an honor. I'm a big fan of you guys.
We're looking for the movie when it comes to our town in Madison, Wisconsin. We also want to thank Brian Turani. Brian is our producer and our engineer. And our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Free Thought Radio is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. You can listen to all the past shows if you go to our website, ffrf.org/radio, and sign up for the podcast.
Ask for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. And we have a new issue out of Free Thought Today, our newspaper, the June-July issue. It is full of good reading by our editor, Bill Dunn. He's done a great job introducing you to freethinkers around the country. We have a photo spread of our Let's Call the Whole Thing Off anti-National Day prayer rally, a lovely piece by a high school teacher here in Madison, Wisconsin, who advises a Freethought Club. So get a sample copy by calling 1-800-335-4021.
Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday